Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
The aftermath of October 7th and the war that followed sometimes shows that something deeper shifted, not just in Israel and Gaza, but in the way that the world sees Jews, Israelis, and the very notion of Jewish defense. We've seen it in college campuses, we've seen it in international courts. The backlash has been visceral, vocal, and often vicious. And anybody who follows me on Twitter or on X will know exactly the viciousness that comes my way as well. And that's just one individual. So what does this mean in 2025 to walk freely and proudly as a Jew? Well, when we look at what happened in Sydney over the weekend, we look at what's happening around the world, it is very frightening. Joining me is Lieutenant Colonel Morris Hirsch. He is a senior fellow at the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs and former director of the military prosecution for Judea and Samaria, a legal mind on the front lines of warfare and public diplomacy. A very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. It's a very difficult subject. How would you describe the global shift in attitude towards Israel and Israelis since October 7th attacks and the war that followed?
So, good morning, Howard, to you and to all the listeners. I think we have to divide the period since October 7th into two very clear periods. There was the first 24 hours of after the massacre, in which there appeared to be some type of sympathy with the Jews, with the Jewish people, in the light of the massacre. And then the rest of the period onwards, when it very quickly changed, the narrative changed. Israel became an aggressor, a mindless aggressor, simply killing Palestinians, as they say, for no reason. The context was forgotten, the history was forgotten, and really, the world changed its approach in that they were happy to see their Jews and they were happy to commiserate with us. But they were very unhappy with us actually standing up for ourselves and fighting back, and that's really, I think, the story. It was that Iranian Qatari-backed propaganda drive that really switched much of the narrative on the one hand, and it played into an environment, into inbred, I think, anti-Semitism that was always there and festering. But it came to the forefront because now it became acceptable to be anti-Jewish, anti-Israeli, and really very openly anti-Semitic.
The truth is, though, that even in those 4 days that you spoke about, what we saw was a lot of gaslighting. We saw when there was the claim that a certain number of babies had been beheaded, that became something to mock Jews about because that number wasn't accurate. When we saw, there was denials. There were the fact that Israel had done this. There was, despite the fact that we had Hamas using GoPros and filming the horrors of what they were doing, we even had denial from the get-go. And there was almost no time to catch up because while Israel was trying and Jews were trying to prove how bad this was, already they were moving on. They were moving on to, well, the fact that Israel is now going to be punishing Gazans in a collective punishment. So it was, even the immediate aftermath was very, very limited, I think.
Yes, without question. As I said, I didn't even give it 96 hours. I think it was 24 hours of grace, of sympathy, even pretend sympathy with the Jews, and then it immediately changed. It would appear, Howard, that this whole and really, it's not. I don't think I'm really telling something new here. This whole event was very, very carefully planned. Not only the terrorist attack itself, but rather everything that came with it. The explanations to the world, mobilizing students on campuses, mobilizing local factions of the Palestinian supporters, making sure that they had sufficient funding and messaging to put out and to take immediately to the streets. And within 24 hours, that whole propaganda machine was working. Now, had it not been prepared ahead of time, then it would have been almost impossible to get such massive mobilization. But the territory had been prepared for many, many years. The claims of Israel committing genocide and the blockade on Gaza and all of these claims that we'd heard before now came immediately to the front. The Palestinians have been claiming that Israel is starving, is blockading Gaza since 2007. And it's been a very long time building this terror narrative. And obviously, it's not true. I wrote a paper recently for the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs, in which, among other things, I showed how many entrances and exits from Gaza into Israel there were over the last 10 years, how many truckloads of foodstuffs and everything else was going into Gaza, coming out of Gaza. I think most people don't know that in the first 9 months of 2023, there were 437,000 exits from Gaza into Israel. Now, that's not a siege, but that was the language, that was the narrative. That's what provided the basis for October 8th. Let's start pushing back against the Jews in this whole international forum, and that is really what we're seeing.
And that's what we saw, in fact, here in South Africa when Naledi Pandor, the then head of DIRCO, Department of International Cooperation, called Hamas immediately thereafter to offer support. And we have no idea what that support meant, but it was support in some way. That tells us the whole story there. Did this reaction, not South Africa's reaction, but did this global reaction take somebody as seasoned as you, and I'm not calling you old, I'm calling you seasoned. Did it take you?
You could call me old.
I suppose you've been called worse, probably.
Exactly.
Did it take you by surprise?
No, I don't think so. I think, again, as someone who follows all of these mechanisms and has done for a very long time, you've seen the hatred coming out of, starting with the UN. And granted, nobody really pays much attention to the UN, but the reports that they write all the time and spread around the world are so violently anti-Israel. It's not passive. They are violently anti-Israel and pro-Palestinian terror that it's unbelievable. I spent a while going over the reports of an organization called the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Aid. Mm-hmm. You would think this would be a good office. But really, Howard, if you read these a year of the UN officer's report, I'm telling you, you too would hate Israel. Because reports are so lacking in context, so violently anti-Israel, so biased. And so when you're the average Joe on the street and you're reading these reports, or you're in a foreign ministry of some government and you're reading these UN reports, that's what you see. That's what you hear. It comes with the halo of UN neutrality, obviously, which obviously it isn't true. It's not neutral and there's no halo there. But that's the at least the perception. And so this preparation has been long coming. It's been well prepared. It's been well funded. Students for Justice in Palestine on the U.S. campuses and then spreading around the world in whatever name they adopted for themselves is something which had been coming. This alliance of, unfortunately, of some part of the South African government with Iran.
Yeah,
and the axis of evil.
No, that was definitely.
These are things which you could see coming.
Absolutely. We don't have a lot of time, but I have to ask you one question. We often sit, well, not often, we do this all day. Jews around the world, and forget haters, I'm talking about Israel supporters, around the world are obviously very invested. We're part of it, maybe not to the same extent, but we are. And we feel it. And we comment on how Israel is doing as Israelis do all the time. What is your comment, somebody from within Israel, on how diaspora Jewry is doing to fight what is a war in our areas? How are we doing?
So I think that there's different approaches to that. I think you've seen also really a range of different responses. The immediate pouring out of money. The diaspora Jewry has opened their wallets and has donated over $1 billion over the last year and a half for all different types of causes in Israel, which was amazing. You saw this influx of lone soldiers, of Jews around the world getting up and saying, you know what, I need to be part of that mechanism that's defending the Jewish people. So you've seen those two positives. You've seen, unfortunately, and here I look more towards the Israeli government than really to the diaspora, we've seen a great difficulty of the diaspora Jewry to explain what is going on here, what are the goals of the war, what are we doing, what are we understanding, where are we going forward. And that I was literally just talking about it last night with someone. The problem is that even the most informed sometimes don't really understand what the goals are and what's going on.
Absolutely.
And so what can you then expect from the anyone rest else. Of the community that are definitely supportive but just lack information? And that is where I fear we have failed. We, Israel, have failed in supporting the diaspora Jewry and really arming it with information.
We are going to come back to this conversation, Maurice Hirsch. Thank you, as always. We definitely will have this discussion another time and continue it.